Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 11, Sleep Unplugged, Sleeping Pills, Sleeping with the Enemy. Really excited to have you all be a part of this show today. Excited that we've reached episode 11. I really appreciate all the fun and positive feedback about not only the last episode, episode 10, on the alarm clocks, but also our bonus episode that we recorded. Really appreciate the feedback on that one too. That was a big surprise. So, in the canon of things, this is actually episode 11. And since it's the first Monday of the month, we're going to be talking about a topic associated with insomnia, and that is sleeping pills. And it's a huge topic. We will revisit this in all kinds of detail. I've wanted to do a episode on the business of sleeping pills and specific research around sleeping pills, but I thought we'd get the ball rolling today with a discussion about my own views about sleeping pills and how I arrived at them and just my own musings and thoughts about the whole situation. Before we get going, no corrections that I'm aware of in the previous episode 10 or in the bonus episode, although when I was listening back to the bonus episode, I make this huge deal about not referring, I'm sure you're sick of this, the Fort Worth Fire Department's in Dallas, Fort Worth. I say it in the episode again. So once again, I'm sorry. I really have a problem with that. Outside of that, I think we were pretty correction-free, but as always, appreciate your feedback, criticism, praise, anything you want to say about the episode, I'm open to. Really like to hear it, good or bad. The way you can get in touch with me and a hold of me with the show is through my Twitter and Instagram, which is Dr. Chris Winter. You can go through TikTok if you like, although I'm not very active on that platform. It's kind of a sad effort on there, but it's all Dr. Chris Winter, TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter. And really appreciate the feedback about everything and the questions. And like I said in the previous episode, trying to get to everybody's questions. And will as soon as I can. Also plug my two books, The Sleep Solution, Why Your Sleep is Broken and How to Fix It, as well as The Rested Child, Why Your Tired, Wired, or Irritable Child May Have a Sleep Disorder and How to Help. And sleeping pills is pretty relevant to both of those books because the first book in particular was really written as a response to the sleeping pill epidemic as I saw it. Patients who felt like they were struggling with their sleep or couldn't sleep wanted sleeping pills. And that book was my attempt to really make people understand that your sleep disorders, particularly the ones related to insomnia, can be effectively solved without a sleeping pill. So I'm going to say some things today about sleeping pills. And I just want to be very clear as we sort of start about a few things. Number one, I was trained to use sleeping pills. So in my training, it was part of what we did for individuals who had difficulty with their sleep. My views on sleeping pills have been formed by not only my own experiences, but also the experiences of other people who have mentored me. And so I think that experts in a field are really only experts if they're constantly learning, if they're constantly opening up themselves to criticism and feedback. And like I said at the beginning of the show, I always welcome this. So I'm going to put forward what I consider to be a logical argument. Is there going to be some sort of confirmation bias here? Absolutely. I think that's it's impossible to avoid that. But as I talk about sleeping pills, I want to construct an argument as we go through that is painfully logical and not something that you can sort of debate. You are safer flying across the country than you are driving across country. I think that is a true statement. I think from a risk reduction perspective, you are much like less likely to be hurt flying than you are driving. So there's always going to be individuals who you can give them all the data in the world, and they're going to come back and tell you that they're still terrified to step on the plane. But if we're driving, that's not a problem. And to me, that's a confirmation bias. And it's something that we as sleep doctors deal with all the time, especially with insomnia. I know what you're saying, but I can't sleep without a pill. I understand how you feel about alcohol, but I sleep better with alcohol. So it's important for us to kind of set these parameters up front that as we speak today, we're going to try to be mathematical in our precision as we sort of move through these arguments. So why do I not like sleeping pills? And so we'll call this episode, episode 11, Sleeping Pills, Sleeping with the Enemy. And we have a joke in our clinic, little sayings that we often say, little rules. You can't fall asleep hanging sheetrock. That's one of my favorites. And what I mean by that is it's hard to fall asleep if you're busy. So a lot of people who struggle with excessive sleepiness keep themselves busy. Another one that's sort of germane to what we're talking about today is I've never met a sleeping pill that doesn't lie. And what I mean by that is I think that it's difficult sometimes for patients to understand what they're getting with sleeping pills when they're coming to our clinics for help with our sleep. So number one reason why I don't like sleeping pills and think that they're not good medicine is that I feel that they're unnecessary. Now, I'm going to qualify this. When I say unnecessary, I'm going to refer back to episode 2, what insomnia is not. And what insomnia is not is an inability to sleep. Get 100 sleep doctors together, they're going to tell you, yeah, by and large, that is not at all what insomnia is. It's an individual who's not falling asleep as fast as they would like. It's an individual who wakes up more often than he or she would like. But generally, we are not treating people who have lost the ability to sleep. So reason number one is that the whole premise that we're often using these pills is flawed from the outset. In fact, when you see a lot of insomnia patients in a clinic, like insomnia specialists do, one of the things they will often come bearing is a chart full of treatment failures, including the 12 different drugs that have been tried that, quote unquote, haven't worked. Well, I was on this drug, it worked for a week, then it stopped working. I tried this drug, it just didn't work. And I think it's important, and we'll get into this as the episode goes along, is that the definition of work is extremely important in this situation. Because if the problem is I can't sleep, then we've got a problem before we've even started. So reason number one, I don't think these pills are particularly necessary. Now, I said there were some caveats, and generally we do corrections and then we do viewer mail. I'm going to use my viewer mail play here and read a tweet from Matthew Troster, who's a Scottsdale. He's from Scottsdale, Arizona, and he is a neurodevelopmental. I just lost it. My goodness. So basically what I said was I put a tweet out there just for fun that said, I hate sleeping pills. And he said, basically, you know what? You're beyond correct. They're terrible. However, in some situations, almost there. Sorry about this. And the technology, boom. So he wrote, you're beyond correct. Hypnotics should be the last option. However, for families of children with neurodevelopmental challenges, we should not be afraid to consider them. And I think that's a great point. And so he's a sleep medicine specialist, again, in Scottsdale, Arizona. You can follow him at MMTDO on Twitter. Appreciate that. So that sort of brings me to point number two, which is they're not reflective of the population that needs them. And here's what I mean by that. Matthew is 100% correct. If you're asking me, Chris, So what you're saying is there's no reason to use sleeping pills. We can collect them all and dump them in a lake. That'd be an interesting lake to dump. I'd be curious to see what happened with the fish in that lake. But yeah, no, that's not at all what I'm saying. I think there are reasons to use sleeping pills. And here we get into the sort of classic debate problem of the many and the exception. Let's go back to the airline pilot. Well, I don't fly because I had a friend at church who flew and crashed. Well, Liz, I'm really sorry about your friend. But the fact that that happened doesn't prove that flying across the country is less safe than driving across the country. It's one bad outcome. You're sort of conveniently forgetting about all the other great outcomes that happened. So when we look at 1,000 people who go into clinics every day looking for sleeping pills, Matthew's example, I would suggest to you, is an outlier. I see adults and children in my clinic all the time. In fact, this reminds me of a patient that I saw when I was in fellowship with my fellowship director, who had been a massive cocaine and drug abuser for, I think, decades, and then got clean. But as my fellowship director sort of explained, he said, this guy has literally burned out his neurotransmitter systems in his brain. I'm not certain he has the necessary neurotransmitters anymore to even generate what we consider to be healthy sleep. So he was using different medications of all kinds to try to recreate that chemical cascade that created sleep. Okay, sure, absolutely. I think this could be life-changing to an individual. So I just want to be very clear. These represent exceptionals. The shift worker, the airline pilot that's flying back and forth to Sri Lanka and the time zone changes are crushing him, or the business worker. If you're asking me, hey, Chris, what does the average person who comes to your clinic look like? It doesn't look like that. That's not reflective of what we're looking for or what we're looking at in our clinic. What we're looking at in our clinic is 43-year-old that says, hey, you got to help me sleep. I can't sleep. And we know that because when we look at the marketing of these sleeping pills, they're not saying, hey, were you a massive drug abuser in the 80s? Well, this medication with the right help might really help to restore something approximating normal sleep again. Talk to your doctor. That's not at all what we're seeing. In fact, I'm sort of fascinated by this new drug that's getting ready to, you know, that is launched, Divago, lumbrexant. It's a new drug. And why it caught my attention was that Jennifer Aniston had filmed an ad for them, which I'm sure cost tremendous amounts of money. And in that ad, she wasn't saying, hey, are you a shift worker working 14 days on nights and then transitioning to 14 days days? Hey, you can trust me. I appeared in Friends. I've got a great drug for you. This is really going to help with your shift work like sleep problems. That's not at all what the commercial looks like. She's not mentioning flying back and forth across the country. She's not mentioning jet lag. She's not mentioning anything like that. In fact, if you go to the ad for the, just if you go to Divago, D-A-V-I-G-O, look it up online. You can see their website, www.divago.com. It says, find sleep again with Divago. And the best part of the whole situation is a woman in her pajamas who looks really kind of out of it in the shining hedge maze. Remember the scene in The Shining at the end where is it Danny was trying to run away from Jack Nicholson in the snowy, terrifying maze? And he backtracks his steps to fool his father. And then the next thing you see is he's frozen to death. Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. And we talk about The Shining a lot on this show. Well, there it is. Find sleep again. This poor woman's going through the shining maze looking for sleep. So she has no sleep, but she's looking for it in the terrifying shining maze, and this drug's going to help her find it. So that's who it's being promoted to. I mean, let's give me a break. If this drug were only used for the purposes that most sleep doctors think it should be used for, it would not be a particularly profitable drug. So it's not a necessary drug, number one. It's not what our patients are looking for or what they need for the most part. So appreciate Matthew's comment. That is an exception. That is definitely not the rule. The third thing is, okay, they don't work that well. You know, when you talk to people about the drug that they are taking for their sleep, it would be interesting to ask them, what is this drug doing for you? Because I'm going to tell you what they're going to tell me. Because they do it every day. Every day. I've been seeing patients since I think 2004 I finished fellowship. So I was seeing patients in 2004, seeing them as a general neurologist in 2003, 2001. You know, so it's been going on for a while. And what they'll tell you is, hey, I'm Chris, how can I help you? Well, the way you can help me is you can help me sleep. Okay, so what's going on? Well, I'm taking Seroquel. My doctor's giving me Seroquel and Doxepin. Why does he give you those? Oh, that's the only thing we've been able to figure out that'll make me sleep. That's how they feel about their drug. It's the thing that makes them sleep. It's not the thing that enhances their sleep a little bit or makes them fall asleep 5 minutes fast. It is what is allowing them to sleep. That's either what they believe or what they're being told, maybe both. I don't know. I wasn't there when it happened. I ask patients all the time, why don't you ask these questions of the doctor giving you the pills and see what their answer is? So when you actually look at these drugs, I think it's kind of sad sometimes, the effectiveness of them. And being effective and increasing the time you sleep can be two very different things. And what I mean by that is this. Let's look at melatonin. I think melatonin, in a meta-analysis, made people fall asleep 3.9 minutes faster, and their sleep was about 2% more efficient. So of the time you were spending in bed, you were getting about 2% more sleep, falling asleep 3.9 minutes faster. I'm going to tell you how many patients in my career have come to my clinic and said, Doc, you got to help me. I'm getting in bed like at 11 o'clock, and man, it's taking me like till, I don't know, 11:03 to fall asleep. Got anything that maybe could speed that up and give me my extra 3 minutes back? Nobody's ever said that. Do you know what the normal sleep latency is? You know, how long, so you've gotten in bed tonight, you turn the light out. Between that lights out time where you've decided, ready to go to bed, and when you actually fall asleep, what we consider to be normal, it's like 5 to 20 minutes. And five to me is a little short, but you know, 5 to 20 minutes. So somebody says to me, I don't know, it takes me 15 minutes to fall asleep. Bingo, you were right in the sweet spot there. So when somebody says it takes them 30 minutes to fall asleep, yeah, it's a little long, I guess, but not terrible. And so this drug, melatonin, is making you fall asleep 3 minutes faster. I've never had a patient who's come in taking melatonin, believe me, everybody takes melatonin right now, say to me, wow, I'm falling asleep 3 minutes faster and I'm just really crushing it now. It's not at all what they say. It's usually the drug that allows them to fall asleep or the drug that keeps them asleep at night. Let's look at the new drug I was just talking about, the Dvalga, the lemborexant. They looked at that at a 5 milligram dose, a 10 milligram dose, and against placebo. It increased your sleep efficiency 7% at the 5 milligram dose, 8% at the 10 milligram, but placebo was 3%. And in terms of time, 24 minutes more sleep for the small dose, 25 minutes for the bigger dose, and placebo was 16. So let's call it 30 minutes. It gave you 30 minutes, more sleep. That's not what people are reporting at all. Nobody is saying that. Man, I was only, getting 7.5 hours of sleep and just couldn't cut it. But I went to my doctor and he gave me this pill and now I'm getting 8. Okay. But that's not the conversation that people are having. So I think that what's important when we think about that is number 4, relevance. Let's say these drugs increase your sleep by an hour. So without them, you were sleeping 7 hours. And now that you're taking it, you're sleeping 8. So let's just imagine a drug that's giving you an hour of sleep. The important question is that relevant? Is that meaningful to your life or to your health? And on the surface, you would think, of course it is. You're getting an extra hour of sleep. But think about Joey Chestnut. Joey Chestnut is a competitive eater and every year wins the competition at Coney Island of how many hot dogs he can shove into his mouth. And I think it was like 70 in 10 minutes or something. I mean, it's just insane. I mean, don't quote me on that, but it's nauseating when you look it up. Look up how many he can eat at the Nathan's hot dog Coney Island thing that just happened. I mean, he crushes everyone. So when you're looking at somebody like Joey Chestnut, who's eating, let's call it 70 hot dogs in 10 minutes, are you that much more impressed, or is it really, would it be helpful to him to get 71? Does that last hot dog mean anything? Is it improving or hurting his health anymore? I don't know. So I would say in the Joey Chestnut situation, one hot dog meaningless. But an individual who's food insecure, not getting enough food, not getting breakfast, depends on school lunches to actually get their food during the day. I would say that hot dog, one hot dog, is extremely meaningful in that individual's life. So we have to be very careful that we're, and really no studies ever really go to this point, which is what is meaningful? What is changing somebody's performance in their life, in their health? Is that extra few minutes of sleep really doing anything? Because there's plenty of things that we can do to create extra or more sedation. If you look at studies of low dose alcohol, sure. I mean, you get plastered one night with a whole bunch of alcohol, you might sleep or be unconscious a lot more. And believe me, patients use that argument all the time. Yeah, I hear what you're saying, doc, but I just sleep better. I sleep more when I drink. Okay, I'm not going to argue that you're unconscious more with alcohol in your system. But are we going to go down the pathway of suggesting that that's actually healthier than if you didn't drink and instead of being passed out for 10 hours, were only unconscious 7 hours sober, which is the better situation for your long-term health and performance? My guess is the former. So we have to be very careful measuring, as a doctor, as a clinician, health-related benefits by speed to unconsciousness and duration of unconsciousness, because more is not necessarily always better. The next thing I just want to mention is that these things are not without risk. And I'm going to read a few here from a paper I was reading about just with Ambien. Accidents, falls, overdoses, delirium, infection. That's to the person taking them. Here's the risk to the people who are not taking them but are adjacent to the Ambien takers. Assaults, vehicular collisions, crime, individual assaults, where your sexual assault, somebody wakes up, you take an Ambien next to you and does something in bed with you. And I've seen these things. I've seen a baby was thrown out of a window one time. Dad thought the house was on fire. The baby fell in some bushes, no big deal. Had another person running around the woods with a firearm and kind of woke up in the middle of the woods in her pajamas and didn't know how she got there and had no idea why the gun was in her hand. So I think we have to be very careful with these drugs. They're not without risk. So as clinicians, we've got a way, or I've got a way, is the risk to this patient and this sort of small benefit worth it to do what? What are we working on doing? And again, I think that performance is sort of what it boils down to. So the next thing that I would mention is I'm not aware of any sleep aid improving performance in a meaningful way. And patients say this all the time, Chris, I don't want to take the sleeping pill, but I have to because I've got a big job and I've got to perform at my best the next day. Oh, okay. I get it. I see what you're saying. So what you're saying is you don't want to take it, but your performance is benefiting from your use of the sleeping pill, right? Exactly, Chris. I hate them. I hate the fact that I have to take them, but you know, I'm a general manager of this thing, or I'm the boss of this thing, or I got to do this thing. So what's interesting is I'm not aware of any research that would show that. In fact, I often send patients off to the person prescribing the drug and say, and I mean this, again, back to the beginning, humble Chris, show it to me. If it exists out there, send it to me. Oh, look, here's this paper that was from 2021 that I missed that showed that people who took sleeping pills ran faster. It's interesting. Sarah Mednick did a study not too long ago showing that some episodic memory might be improved by the use of Ambien. So that's interesting, isn't it? That perhaps, you know, episodic memory is like, I don't know, your first kiss. You know, you just take me through that memory. You know, mine was with a pillow, but that's a different story, right? So episodic memory is improved with this drug. Now, she says in her discussion, There are other studies that don't show this, and some that show no effect at all. Some show no effect at all. Some show it actually worsens memory. Our study, and here's why we think, actually showed improvement. Sarah Mednick's a killer sleep researcher. She wrote a great book that I really like called The Power of the Downstate. Check it out. And so that's different, isn't it? If there's more research coming out that's saying, look, these drugs improve memory, they may have utility in individuals with memory disorders. They can help with attention. So the attention deficit. So if there's a body that emerges like that, I'm here. I'm not against pills. I give pills all the time, but I give a pill for restless leg because it's treating a disorder. I give a pill for narcolepsy because it's treating a disorder. So if this can be shown to actually improve something beyond a number that has questionable relevance, I'm here for it. I have two more reasons why I don't use sleeping pills. And the first is we've got good treatments for insomnia that don't involve a pill. Cognitive behavioral therapy is awesome. It works. It does require work, but it can really get people out from underneath the problem. So it was interesting. I was talking to a fellow clinician and she said, look, I think sleeping pills are useful. They're a tool in my tool belt, especially for people who don't want to do cognitive behavioral therapy. That's interesting. I've thought about that a lot. It was a great point. She also drew an analogy to depression, meaning that how do we define work? Is it making sure somebody's sleeping? Well, we know they are. Is it making sure somebody's sleeping more? Well, we've talked about that. They probably do make people sleep more, 2 minutes more, 10 minutes more, 13 minutes more. Is that relevant? Do they make people happy? So how do we define the end goal of a depression treatment? Hey, I've just been feeling really bad. Motivation's low. I used to play the guitar. I don't really do that anymore. Relationship with my partner is kind of failing. We're not really intimate much anymore. Just really down. Okay. So what do? We can initiate some sort of talk therapy, counseling. Wonderful people out there. They are stressed right now because they are overworked, but they're out there. They're available. What if the patient says, I don't want to do that. I just want a pill. I just want an antidepressant. We do that. I do that. So it's interesting. This clinician says, well, why don't we just do that with sleeping pills? Why don't we just make them happy here? You don't want to do cognitive behavioral therapy. You don't want to read my book. You don't want to really get into it. You just want a pill. It just, to me, it sort of goes against, I feel like I'm lying. I feel like the act is sort of a lie to the patient. Like, do I have to believe in a therapy? I believe in Prozac. Do I have to believe in a therapy for it to work? When a patient comes to my clinic and says, I'm taking, I don't know, Flintstone vitamins, and I found that the orange ones really help me sleep better. I mean, as a rule, I don't really question things. I think the placebo effect is huge in people. We know it is. So what do we do with this? What do we do with, I mean, how much belief and faith and enthusiasm must a clinician have for a therapy for us to use it? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. My final reason for, I'm going to read something to you as my final reason. I'm going to read you an ad for a sleeping pill. Whenever a patient needs prompt, effective sedation, this pill has you covered. I'm not going to give you the name of it yet. You can achieve any degree of cerebral depression using short-acting this drug, usually with only about a half the dose of many other similar sleeping pills. This means less drug to be inactivated, shorter duration of effect, and little tendency towards hangover. It's useful for simple insomnia to manic psychosis. And of course, with short-acting this drug, you are using a thoroughly studied sedative hypnotic with a wide margin of safety. Hundreds of clinical reports, more than 26 years of wide medical use stand behind your prescription. So next time, anytime a sedative or hypnotic is indicated, consider short-acting this drug, a standard in barbiturate therapy. So what I just read to you was an ad for one of my favorite historical sleeping pills. And I love the history of sleeping pills. I'm really into it. I collect sleeping pill ads. This was reading from an ad that I'll post on social media from Abbott, I believe it was 1956, for the drug Nimbutal, which is pentobarbital. So it's a barbiturate. Barbiturates sort of came around, I think, in the 1860s, but really sort of hit their stride in the 1920s as sort of the go-to sedative for individuals. So I think the first widely used sedative that was created was in 1832, chloral hydrate. So these drugs came along like in the 1860s, Nimbutal, and then they became, there's all these different variations of barbiturates. And this drug was synthesized and sort of put out there in the 1930s, pentobarbital. It was advertised as Nimbutal. It was used for a very long period of time. However, the addiction and the overdose rates over time, people said this is just too dangerous. And the drug was actually taken off the market in 1999. However, it is still used for two purposes. Number one, putting animals down. It's a very effective, quick, and thought to be a very painless way of putting a pet down. So you give them a bunch of Nimbutal, pentobarbital, and they die peacefully. It can be used in assisted suicide with people too, although it's not necessarily legal in most places. The other place they use Nimbutal now is with lethal injections. So the criminal justice system sometimes uses this drug as part of a lethal injection cocktail for people. So not used anymore for simple insomnia, as this ad would say, because it's dangerous. Once again, we're back to risk. And so my final reason for not using these drugs is we look at these old sleeping pill ads, and trust me, I'll put a bunch of them on the site. I try to put them in my books, but copyrights, even if these companies weren't around anymore, Abbott's still around, but you know, they just didn't allow me to do it, but I can post them on my social media. So the real reason is that I just think history is going to judge these drugs poorly. And you know what they say about history, we those who don't study it are doomed to repeat it. So if you actually study the history of sleeping pills, there is a cycle. It's the discovery, and it's awesome, and it's effective, and it's safe. Studies show it's super safe. And as the cycle goes on, we discover some bad things about them. Maybe some people die. And eventually they fall out of favor because, well, we've got some new drugs now that are safer and they don't do the things that the old drugs do. So I just wonder, in 30 years, people are going to look back at me, they'll look back at this podcast, they'll look back at my tweets and say, oh man, that guy was so far off on those things. Oh my God, look back in the day, Dr. Winter and all of his colleagues would put people in sleep labs and tape wires to them. And they would spend the night and watch them on cameras. And man, we get all that stuff now off of the ring you wear on your finger. But that's funny. They used to do that back in the day. So I'm sure there will be things that I'm doing right now that people in the future will look at and say, what were they thinking? What was Chris thinking? Oh my God, I listen to this podcast and hear him talk about this thing. It's hilarious. Man, he had no idea what was going on. I don't think that's going to be the case for sleeping pills. I don't think that we're going to look back at the current lot of sleeping pills that we have and think, oh man, Chris was way off, but he should have been giving everybody those sleep. Everybody who asked for that sleeping pill, he should have been giving it to them because it just made them sleep better. It made them healthier. They lived longer. They were, I don't know, neuroprotective, made them jump higher, lift higher weights, better lovers, better parents, whatever. I don't think that's going to be the case. I actually, in my gut, think it'll be the opposite, that over time, we'll look back at these medications and think, as the doctor said, they're right for specific usages. But to sort of put these commercials and ads and things out to the public, can't find sleep, here's the drug. I think we'll look back sort of with poor favor. Now, I do want to give a little props here to... We were kind of making fun of the Find Sleep Again ad. But before I go, I do want to mention that Belsomra, another sleep aid that I think its usefulness is pretty low as well, too. However, Belsomra's ad on their page was, your insomnia support begins here. I think it's a whole lot nicer of a way than find your sleep. But anyway. We could pick at these things all night. Well, I appreciate the follows. I appreciate the feedback. We've come to the end of our show. I hope it was helpful to you just to sort of think about how I'm thinking about sleeping pills. And if you have other thoughts or ideas or places where I'm just way off base, let me know. I really would like to know. Until then, you can follow me on Dr. Chris Winter Twitter, Dr. Chris Winter Instagram, Dr. Chris Winter TikTok, buy my book, The Sleep Solution, Why Your Sleep's Broken, How to Fix It. The rested child, why you're tired, wired, or irritable child may have a sleep problem and how to help is available in paperback now. Appreciate the support of the podcast. I hope you all sleep well until the next episode.